need four roots. Okay? And by all means, there are different sources within Chazal over what's a very first question we're going to ask, whether it's what we deal judiciously in business, whether we set aside time for learning Torah. But one of the questions they will ask of us, again, I'm not sure if it's one of the first questions, is, did you enjoy everything in this life that was permitted to you? And the Gemara says there will be a din v'cheshbon if there were things that we could have enjoyed that we didn't. Okay, now what do we mean by this? And this pom-pom juice is quite adorable, by the way. Now, there could be some things that you enjoy doing, not because the thing itself is enjoyable, but because there's a result that will be quite, let's say, enjoyable, something to brag about, something fulfilling,
doing like
such as the time you spend at the gym. Right?
Doing some
okay. Now, doing some chesed, I think it's to do chesed because it makes you feel good. There might be a bit of selfishness in it, but who cares? I'm doing something good. In fact, if you remember in the Haftorah of Yom Kippur, Yeshayahu said twice to feed the poor, pros l'ra'ev lachmecha, to give your bread out to the poor. He says it twice, and the Mefarshim, there's even a Maamar Chazal that says two times, because one is that giving to the poor helps the poor and may even help yourself. But two, more important, you're supposed to give to the poor because that's what God wants. Right? When all is said and done, we should say, we do everything to serve the master on high. And a slave is not supposed to ask, how does it feel to serve the master? I'm not interested. I'm just going to hear to serve the master. All right, put that aside for now. But on the other side, there are these two aspects of what we're doing, because it's helpful, but it might make me feel good as well. Right? So chapter 2 of Kohelet is about maximizing the meaning in life through physical enjoyment. Why did this have to be a chapter in the Bible? Should the Bible have to even delve in this? Absolutely. It was a philosophy of ancient civilization. What do you call it? Epicureanism, hedonism, whatever it is. There was an attempt in ancient times to resolve the human problems of human condition by having simply as much sheer enjoyment as possible. Now the Torah knows that this is a human endeavor. So the Torah tells us there are certain times where I'm commanding you to be happy. Even if you're sad, I want you to be happy. The wedding I attended yesterday was attended by two young children who just lost their father, first cousin of mine. And they're standing on the side all by themselves. They're probably in some kind of sock to stay all the way on the side. It's their first cousin getting married. And I took the boy into the circle and I said, listen, I want you to dance. The shloshim is over. It's your father's sister's child who's getting married. He wants you to dance. And my wife took the girl. These are teenagers. So, you know, there's something about, you can, life is filled with all sorts of things that, and I'm starting to actually cry on the floor just thinking, it's not fair. These kids are going to grow up without a father, and the boy looks so much like his father. All the things that you're thinking of. And I say, look, the father's looking down right now. All you have to do is, you say, even if my mother and my father leave me, ki avi v'imi azavuni, v'ashem ya'asveni. God will be there for these kids. Who knows what they're going to grow up to be. But here it is. We have to do everything we can in this world to maximize. Imagine this. This Mesilas Yesharim says, to maximize pleasure. We're here to make the most pleasing life that we can. That's called pleasure. Now, this Mesilas Yesharim, which is a famous book about Musar, right? Opening line is, how can the human being maximize pleasure? You think that's a book of Musar, huh? That's what it says. And he says, now let me tell you how to get the most out of pleasure. So Shlomo's books in the Bible, two of them at least, Mishlei and Kohelet, are really Musar Sfarim about how to make the most of this, what often is a stinky human condition. You know, it often is a really terrible, terrible condition. There's a lot of room for suffering and all those kind of things. And we're going to read this chapter here, Perek Beis, all about human pleasure. Now, the Gemara says that we're not supposed to derive any pleasure in this world without first making a bracha. Without first making a blessing. Now, I'd like to, before embarking on this chapter, explain what this memory means. Because there are lots of things that we enjoy in this world. It says, It's forbidden to derive pleasure from this world without first blessing, making a blessing. Wait a second. I enjoy some beautiful music. I get much more pleasure from beautiful music than from some bland foods. No, it's a great pleasure. Mm-hmm. Right? There's some pleasures that we do not, for which we do not make a bracha. Right? What does this mean? And if I see the Grand Canyon or the Niagara Falls, and my eyes behold an amazing sight, that bracha is not called a birchas hanehanim. It's not called a pleasure bracha. It's called a birchas hashevach. A praise. The point is that these are similar. I am praising God for making it part of my human condition to enjoy this. Beautiful. I'd like to thank Kathy Kaufman for convincing me to make this bracha every day. Very bracha. And I never made it before, but now every day since Sukkot, I'm making this bracha. Bracha to Adonai Eloheinu Melech Haolam on the same Reyach Tov Baperos.
What is it?
Hanosein Reyach Tov Baperos.
Has given us the smell.
Beautiful smell of fruits. Beautiful fruit. Anyone who wants, please help yourself. Okay. Please answer the main. I sort of had all in mind. So if we are benefiting from this world and we see it as some kind of transference of praise to something greater than I am. For instance, imagine this. And for you young ladies, maybe this is going to come online to you sometimes. But if a guy comes over to you and says a bracha, he says, Bracha to Hashem, Al-Kenu Malchus, B'Shem U'Malchus, Shekocha Lo Ba'olamo. And you say, what's that? Listen, says in the Gemara, you see a beautiful person, you're supposed to make a bracha. Right? So what is that bracha? That sounds like treatise to me. A guy called Yeshiva, can you picture Yeshiva bracha walking and sitting next to a pretty girl at a wedding and he says that bracha is treatise. Right? It's not unless he really feels that this is a beautiful person. And to me I'm getting pleasure. I'm not supposed to get pleasure from looking at a pinky. I'm getting pleasure from looking at I'm getting pleasure that Hashem put such a beautiful person in the world. Sheker Achein Vehebel Ayofi, excuse me, you'll find 100 stories in the Bible, especially our holy patriarchs. The Bible manages to tell us that they married pretty women. If that's Sheker, what do you bother telling me that? Just say, Avraham married, not a babe, he married a Balas Chesed. Nowhere are we told, but except indeed, the way she acts, that Sarah was a Balas Chesed. Why not tell us that? Right? I would know she's pretty, by the way, Paro and Abimelech have eyes on her. But you have to tell me she's beautiful. Because the beauty is a very positive thing in this world. If it's Isha Yiras Hashem, Yitzi Salal, if the beauty, whether it's in a woman or in a piece of art or a piece of music, becomes an object of which we can praise Hashem. If you saw Mozart creating music as a bracha to make, right? Chacham Razim. Gemara says when you see a brilliant person, you should say, Bracha to Hashem HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Chacham Razim. Masterful and mystical teaching.
You must or you may.
Gemara says you should. Now, it's subjective. Not everyone considers this to be wisdom. There are some objective wise people. The question comes in the post if it's a wise, wicked person. Right? Anyway, this is what I would like to derive from this parak. This is a parak of real extravagance in Koheles, but it also has parallels in Sefer Malachim. Shlomo builds wonderful things in that book. Right, and accomplishes great, he builds things for God, and he builds lots of nice things for himself. But in addition to building a wonderful temple, he also built great basin and gardens and fountains and wonderful things that overtaxed the people. And those things brought down his kingdom. Right? If you look at chapter 8 of Sefer Shmuel Bet, it describes those people who helped David run his country. Four people. If you look at Perek Dalet of Malachim Aleph, it describes the people who helped Shlomo run his country. It's about 30 people. You get a picture, I don't want to get into politics here, but bloated government is the stuff of Shlomo's kingdom. And the people go to him. Again, let's keep politics out of this. Everyone's spending a lot of money. Everyone's pork fed in government in this country. But the... So people go to Shlomo and they say, it's becoming too expensive to be a subject of yours. That's your Shlomo son Rechavim. If you lower taxes, we learned that last year in the Melachim class, if you lower the taxes, we will continue to be your subjects. If not, so Nebuch, remember the first Targum Koheles. Koheles looked at Nebuah and his son, and he saw he was giving his kingdom over to a no goodnik, right? And this guy refused to give in. Okay, so we're going to start the third phase. Amarti ani b'libi b'chono anascho b'simcha re'ei b'tov. You should know the Talmud has some very, very, very bad things to say about asceticism, right? About people who deny themselves. Ilya the Kutzker Rebbe said that if you want to eat at my tish, and you refuse just to show that you are in control of your midos, if you want to don't eat because you get on it's not easy, but you come to my tish, you stuff your face. And he said, if you don't eat just to show that you have temperance, it's idolatrous. That's what he called it, Avodah Zarah. If you don't eat at my tish, he used to hand out, you know, like every tish, right? Yeah, food. If you don't eat my tish because you want to show that you're just, you can, I'm hungry, but I'm good. I don't have to, you don't trust my kashrus, right? So he said it's Avodah Zarah. Why? Because all Avodah Zarah is a facade. You're putting a covering over what's real and true. So too, don't have this facade. Now obviously, you don't want to be overindulge. Shlomo is over-indulging in our story. And he uses the Lashon anascha b'simcha, very unusual verb. Anascha, you see the verb? Nun samachov means to pour. You get the point. I am trying to enjoy life through outside stimulant. Okay? People who like to color their lives with stimulants, whether they're drugs, barbiturates, wine, whatever it might be, tend to be looking for something, right? They're searching, and it tends to be a spiritual search. Let's say that the problem with the spiritual search is that it gives you an artificial sense of being something you're not, and then when you crash and land, you're still not that thing. What makes us feel fulfilled? This is accomplishment. What's the word for happy in Hebrew? Okay, good. There are many. Ish, ashrei, simcha, sason, ashrei. She's the happiest happy in Tanakh. It's the first word in Tehillim. Ashrei ha'isha shelah. Right? The happiest happy is ashrei. Ishur in Hebrew means validation. Happiness comes from a sense of accomplishment. I feel validated. I feel recognized. I feel, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the public eye. That person needs too much. But this Shlomo is trying to gain happiness with nisuch, with pouring things, and that's an artificial stimulant. We're able to and just enjoy good. B'nei gam hu havel. Why is it havel? Who says money can't buy happiness? The Yankees.
I thought you were keeping out of politics.
The New York Yankees, baseball.
That's what I mean.
Didn't Jimmy George Will last week, he said that the Yankees prove, just like politics, that throwing money at something does not necessarily guarantee success. But because there will come a time when you get older when you will not be able to enjoy this kind of happiness anymore. I'll worry about that when it happens, right? I was just teaching Malach Malif in my 8th grade class at MDS, and I asked the girls, what do you like most about an enjoyable thing? Right, after it's finished and you just went on vacation, came back from vacation, have good memories of vacation, what makes it enjoyable? So after 10, 15 responses, they all came to an agreement is that the enjoyable thing is to repeat it and do it again someday. Right? So to try to relive this enjoyment. Right? If not in this form, then in that form. If not for myself, maybe through my children, vicariously. So when the time comes, Shlomo's telling us, because he's writing this in his old age, well, you can no longer enjoy this thing. Then it becomes bitter. And time is going to play that game on all of us. So he says, Pasuk Beis, let's go around. We don't get as far as this. Zchoko Marti Maholal.
Zchoko Marti Maholal Ulsimcha Mazar Osak.
Stop with that, yeah. Why does he say that Zchok and Simcha are worthless? Maholal, Rashi has an interesting commentary to it, is that it's fleeting, but he says mahol because Mahol is like a slippery juice. It's called Moel. That's what it's having nothing to do with someone who does a bris. But so he says it's fleeting. It slips through your hands. Now, I have to tell you, remember when we discussed the canonicity of Koheles, that the rabbis questioned his canonicity for at least three reasons, right? That they thought it might not really belong in the Bible. So one of the reasons is that the book is filled with contradictions. In some places, he actually says that, you know, simcha is a good thing for you. Be happy. Don't worry. You ever read some of the studies that especially that's why they bring clowns to the children's wards, that when someone is even in a debilitating sickness, put in a good mood, it has some kind of palpable effect on their own willingness and desire to get better. And Shlomo speaks that way later in the book. So here's one of some of the problems. There are a number of midos where in some parts of the book Shlomo says it's negative, and in some parts of the book he says it's positive. And for this reason the rabbis wanted to put the book in Geniza, ki dvarav sotrin ze'ezeh, Shabbat daf mamad aleph. So the Gemara answered, hey, listen, life is filled with contradictions. Life is filled with different nuances, right? At this point, and under these circumstances, chok and simcha is not a good thing. Under these circumstances, it is a good thing. It's as simple as that. You take out your thumb, you brisk a thumb, and you say, oh, this, when if it's something like this, it's good. If it's something like this, you know what I'm saying? You see throughout the book, as you see now, just simcha for simcha's sake, maybe. Okay, it's the Rambam writes in his introduction to Pirkei Avos, known as Shmona Prokim, right? He says that it's ungrateful to not be a kli for simcha at all. Of course, there are times to be saved. There's Tisha B'Av, there's events. You're not going to laugh when someone tells you bad news, obviously, Chas V'Shalom. But it's ungrateful to be sad at all times. Remember when Nehemiah was upset when he got news about what happened in Israel, that the Yerushalayim is still in the state of destruction, and the king came to him and saw it as almost like a treason. He said, "Lama naflu panecha? Like Hashem told Cain, why are you upset? You're standing before the king. How could you be upset when you're able to stand in front of the king?" And the Nehemiah fessed up. He said, "How could I not be upset when the land where my fathers are buried lies in destruction?" And he was so true to the king. And the king's name was Artaxasta. Some say it's Artaxerxes. That the king said, "If that's how you feel about your land, go here's money and go fix it up." And that's what the book of Nehemiah is about the rebuilding of Jerusalem, because this man had the guts to tell the king, "Why I'm upset." So you know what? Talk to God. Go ahead, tell God. You know, God, I'm trying to be happy in your world, and this is why I'm not happy. You know why? Come on, give me some happiness. Right? It's not so bad to talk to God like that. Okay. All right, so Tarti B'Libi L'Shoch. She'll...
Tarti B'Libi L'Shoch Vayayin Etzesari V'Libino Hei B'Chachach Mar V'Lechos V'Sif Lut Ad Asher Ereh Ezer Tov V'Nei Adam Asher Yasu Tachach HaShemayim Yispari Mei Chayayim.
He speaks to Yispari Mei Chayayim because life situation changes of your ability to enjoy these things, right? First of all, they break down cells, anyway. Right? Some of these things, some of these substances that people abuse in their youth, doesn't make it a pretty scene when you get older, right? But what he's saying here is that I tarti bilibi. The word tarti means in Hebrew to latur. The same thing as the scouts did when they went to Israel. To latur, to try, to test, to levakesh. It's parallel to, you know, to make an inquiry, right? So I made the inquiry with my heart. In other words, I did it with emotion, even though this book is certainly an intellectual book, right? Limshoch. Do you see what word he uses? Limshoch bayayin. I let myself go. I let myself be drawn in by the wine, right? Limshoch bayayin is for three. Now we know there are lots of days in the Jewish calendar where some of the poskim say you actually have to drink wine. Not just at the Seder, but you know, certain holidays and Shabbos and drink, enjoy wine. Every Shabbos, the poskim say, you have to have wine for Kiddush. You have to make certain days special. The 100 days a year, we're supposed to have wine. Imagine that. So he says, so be Moshech, let the wine take you. And don't become a monkey, Gemara says, right? But you know, be in charge. Okay? You know your limits. And here the word sichlus is one of those strange Hebrew words. What does it mean here? Does it mean wisdom? Or opposite, yeah. It's not seichel. It's not seichel. The word looks like seichel with a samach, though. Okay. I know that kasil, kasol, means foolishness, right? That often happens in Hebrew, you know, with simla, salma, nechasholim, nechaloshim, where letters interchange. I know it shouldn't happen, but it happens with a good 200 words in the Bible that it has to be a rule. If it happened twice, I'd say, okay, that's crazy. But it happened so many times in the Bible. There's a fancy word for it, but it doesn't matter. Where the letters interchange like that. Keves, Kesev, right? Simla, Salma. So, Sochol and Kasil, it's the same word. Okay, and it happens to be like another number of words in Hebrew, like Lisakel, means to remove stones, take stones away. The skull means to throw stones. The sharesh means to uproot. The shrosh means to root something in the ground. So that could be a difference in binyan. But there are some words in Hebrew that mean itself and its opposite. Right? And this is one of them. Okay, so I tried to, for my heart, to behave in with emotions, but to try to use chokhmah. But instead, what ended up happening was I ended up grabbing onto foolishness. Right? So I would see, what is a good path for man to take under this heaven for the days of his life? And I tell you this, since you cannot do this all the time, this is not going to work for your whole life, don't do it. Don't do it. It's not going to help. It's not going to work. Right? He didn't tell this yet. He's just telling you now, I'm trying to do this all the days of my life. Now, the Das Mikra, you've heard of the Mosad Rav Kook to write books. What he does in these coming next until Pasuk Yud Aleph, he takes every one of these psukim and shows how every single one is represented in Sefer Melachim. Shlomo did all these things. I know you may be familiar with some of the scholarship that this is actually a book written much later than Shlomo. Whatever it is, someone wants to make you think that this is Shlomo. Right? I mean, I'll say this with Mar Sutra, it's written by Shlomo Melech, so fine, I'll do that. Anyway, Pasuk, hey. Do you want more Aslan? Is that too? Hey. Okay. This is also in Malachim. You know, we can read just straight through Perek Pasuk Yud Aleph, actually. I made houses, I made vineyards, I made gardens, I made pardesim, see the word paradise in there. I made just everything that you could just like to sit back and say, wow, look at the leaves changing colors. It looks so nice. And I made all kinds of fruit trees, I made all platters, I made everything you could want to eat. And by the way, it's excellent antioxidant. What is this? Homegrown juice. Homegrown juice. Haven't heard about that yet? Oh, yeah, you have to mix it with something else. You can't just get straight. Okay. Koniti avodim ushpachos uvnei bayit hayali gam yiknei bakar vatzon harbei hayali mikol shayu lefanai birushamayim. I'm not so thrilled that he thinks that part of his enjoyment has to be to purchase slaves and handmaidens. In the ancient world, that's what people thought. In other words, I had people do my work for me. This is not a typically Jewish approach towards happiness in the Torah, by the way. Right? Anyway, so I bought all these things to be serving as food. What is it? I was mikneh bakar and so on serving him. Yeah, food. Lunch. Okay, and I had all these things more than anyone else before me in Yerushalayim. How many people have been before him in Yerushalayim?
One.
No, many. He's not talking about the Jewish Israelite kingdom. He said there have been Jebusite kings here, there have been Canaanite kings here. No one in this city ever could enjoy as much as I did. Now, why do you think he's going all out? There's a verse at the end of this parak that has to tell us why he's going all out. And I say it from Drosha of the Chiddush HaRim on this pasuk in Devarim. Moshe says, Re'ei anochi nosein lifnechem hayom klala uvracha. See that I place before you today a blessing and a curse. And the Chiddush HaRim says, yeah, you know what the people said to Moshe then? What are you telling us? You think you can convince us what is cursed and what is blessed? Excuse me, accuses Moshe. Moshe, we know, we trust you're a very, very spiritual person. You are you're a head in the clouds. You spoke to God yourself. We believe in all those things. But you know what? You don't have you were never in our tents. You were never in our lives. Can you relate to what we started from, where we come from? You're Moshe Rabbeinu, the highest of the high. How can you tell us what we think we should think a blessing and a curse is? How should we be convinced that what you think is a blessing and a curse is what we should think is? And Moshe says, hey, Anochi, excuse me, I grew up in Paro's palace. I have been exposed to every ism and every narishkeit and kritzis and mishgas and MTV or whatever else is out there that you could possibly be exposed to in the ancient world growing up in Paro's palace. One measure says he was 40 when he left, one measure says he was 20, but certainly old enough to soak in what was going on there. And still I was able to, took me some time, I had to take the Egypt out of me, right? Moshe wanted to take the Bnei Yisrael of Egypt, he obviously was not able to take Egypt out of the Bnei Yisrael, right? Maybe Yeshua tried, but they made an egel and they still fetched, they had them into, it was known as the slave mentality, but Moshe is trying to tell them, listen, I can tell you a thing or two. Right? I have some bones in my closet too. You know, the Art Scrolls edition of Moses' youth, I'm sure, would tell us that everything he ever did in his whole life, only he was studying the Chavrusa, trying to get old Paro's couriers to learn Torah, I'm sure, and he tried to get all the horses to stop working on Shabbos, and I'm sure if there was an Art Scrolls written about Moshe's youth, that there, yeah, all of this is true. But, do you know more about this?
I'm just going to raise a question.
Yeah.
Hey, it just seems from what you're saying, and just from Kohelet, that in other words, it almost sounds like a person should explore all these things. It's almost like the Quakers, what they do, or
interesting. Yeah, Shakers. They send them out. What's it called? So in the wild oats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Devil's playground.
So, but I think what you'll see the pasuk at the end. He says, "No one has to try this, because I have done it better than anyone else could possibly."
Does that really satisfy the human nature?
Would it satisfy your curiosity?
Right,
you
see
that. When we get up to that pasuk, we should get up to it shortly. Maybe we'll be able to pursue it. But you have to know who you're speaking to.
They read the cue.
Did I tell you the story? One of the most famous rabbis of the 20th century in the Musar movement was named Chaim Shmulevitz. I told you the story that they wanted to kick him out of the yeshiva because he was a real troublemaker.
Yeah.
And the rabbi came up with a plan. I'm going to work with him. Yeah, you have to know who you're dealing with. That was the Mitzvah made. But the Kohelet is not necessarily written for everybody's needs, right? This is the for people who have sort of like a Mor Nebuchim, right? Some of them want to have a Muna Shlema, not just the Muna Pshuta, that real faith, not just simple faith. Okay. All right. So this is where we are, and Pasuk Ches. Let's continue. Dora, would you read chapter 8? You know, verse 8 has something in it that has always confounded the poskim. Do you see what's going on here in 8?
I amassed even silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and the provinces. I provided myself with various musical instruments.
Oh, wow. That's Art Scrolls, I bet, right?
Yeah.
That's Art Scrolls. Good. Okay. Art Scrolls cannot translate Sharim and Sharos because it means male and female singers. I guess the girls must have been younger than 12 or something like that. There's a serious Kol Isha problem in this process.
Yeah.
Male and female singers.
Singers. and male-female singers. No, because the poskim who discussed this about Kalisha say that if the men and women are singing together, they say that it's okay. Anyway, but no, the poskim that discussed the question of Kalisha today contend with this pasuk. I'll tell you that. They contend, but they try to deal with this pasuk. How does art scroll deal with it? By changing the meaning of the words. All right, shirim b'shiros does not mean various musical instruments.
Maybe I'm off track. How do they justify that?
Got it.
Okay.
They might have something at the bottom of the page, because when they do that, sometimes
they do.
They say
they're following Rashi. Yeah. That's pretty high.
Sanugos b'nei ha'adam shidah v'shidos. What are shidah and shidos? You already said sharim and sharos. What are shidah and shidos? What did you have there?
It says, and with every human luxury.
Chest and chest. Chest and chest, because a shidah is a chest. So chest and more and more and more, lots of them. Okay.
It's poetic. That's right.
But what he's saying here is that he amassed all kinds of luxuries. Fair enough. The Gadalti, Moshe, would you read Pasuk Tes? We just have another two or three psukim like this, and then we'll close it. Go ahead.
The Gadalti, the Mustafti, the Kol Shariah, the Fanad Yushalayim, Ah, Pasuk Amdali.
Okay, so no one before me ever enjoyed such luxury, but my Chochmah was maintained, as if to say that this type of indulgence may actually spoil your chokhmah. Okay. Af chokhmah si amdali. So that I can make an objective decision over whether this is the good way to measure life. Right? This is a good way to measure life. Did I want to tell you about this excellent diet that I once tried? It didn't last too long. I don't know, I wasn't working for some time. Remember, I announced it in Shul that you can eat whatever you want, as much as you want, whenever you want, whatever food you want. Only one rule. So someone, one woman screamed out in the women's section and says, "You're not allowed to swallow it." You can chew it and spit it out, that's all. No, it's more of my one rule. Does anybody remember? Is anyone there at the time? Eat only when you're hungry. But be honest with yourself. Even in the middle of the meal, you have to take a bite, eat slowly. Am I hungry? If the answer is yes, keep eating. Eat whatever you want. Whipped cream, ice cream. But if that's what you're hungry for. But if you're not hungry, don't eat. Nothing.
Most people aren't connected enough to know what it is.
Well, the brain doesn't work fast enough. That's why you have to eat too fast. The brain doesn't get the crack that you're full until you might be healed over. Right?
That's why you have to eat a lot fast. With your diet.
Okay, so anyway, so what is it that determines such a thing? Is it chokhmah to be able to do that? When he says, af chokhmah si amdali, my chokhmah still stood by me. In other words, this indulgence can make you foolish. Because habits can change your way of life. Obviously, that's what the way of life is. It's determined by your habits. But it can actually change your personality. There's a great, great chapter of Nechama Leibowitz on one of her Parshiyos studies that says, actions shape character. It's really very true. So these actions might have shaped my character, but it didn't because my chokhmah stood by me.
Is there any account of what his chokhmah is?
That's what we have to spend the whole rest of the book doing. But there is, I think, we're not going to get to it anytime soon, in the next few weeks, but there is, I think, an overarching definition of Chochmah that will come out of this book. I don't know if there are psukim, it's not Rishis Chochmah Yiras Hashem, but there is an overarching definition of Chochmah that we will try to determine from this book. Right now,
sort of sticks it in there, right in the middle.
Yeah, I might have gotten overcome. I might have been overcome by this lifestyle, and to ruination, if not for my chokmah. The chol asher shalu einai lo atalti mehem. Aviva, would you take it? Do you?
Chol asher shalu einai lo atalti mehem. Bo manati afudi mikol tinsu. Yudi tameach mikol amalim. Vezah hayachas mikol amalim.
I'm like, you know, I worked hard. This didn't come so easy to me. Oh yeah, you didn't like work hard to become king. You were born into a palace. Actually, the Koheles is going to deal with this. At the end of chapter 4, he's going to deal with the question of you know, why some people just fortunate enough to be born into this, and this person is born in the, and you know, how does that work? And just unfortunate few and the unfortunate few. So. We will discuss that when it comes to people born into royalty. But he says, well, listen, I worked for this. I deserve some comfort. And he keeps saying, but kol amoli. I strive. This is not something that I just, you know, take for granted. This is my chelik. This is coming to me. And he'll say later why he's doing this. Almost like Shem Shemayim. Poor Shlomo. He's going through all this hedonism just for us. What a guy.
How does he square this with Devarim, where it says, do not follow after your eyes and your heart?
You know, the word for it in Devarim, where it says that, is actually the same word that he starts the chapter, Tarti. It's the same word, Tarti, believe me. I would say the following. When it says in the Torah, "Los Asurah Harei Levavchem B'Harei Nechem," I can ask the same question: How does that jive with the Yerushalmi I started this year with in Kiddushin? That they're going to ask us, you could have had benefit from that. Why didn't you enjoy it?
Permitted pleasure.
So there are some permitted pleasures. Look, I have another mimer in Sechus Yevamos that says, "Kadesh Atzmacha B'Mutalacha." Make yourself holy by denying yourself some things that are permitted to you. What? So some explain that Yerushalmi as referring to, that's if you have to do tshuva. If you went too far and took things that weren't yours, then you have to, like the David took Bathsheba, wasn't his. So at the end of his life, you know, there was a woman that was taken from him, Avishagashinamis, and he didn't go near her. He said, I have to do tshuva. Right? So the Gemara says, remember she said, yeah, the old man can't steal anymore. So, and he claims that he did tshuva, now that he's not stealing. They use that for Lashon Naki, for a ganef. But you know what it means. So, you can go look at the Gemara yourself and see how that ends. Daf Chavala from Beis and the Masechet Sanhedrin. But, and that's why it says that, you know, you should try to do tshuva when you have the opportunity, because in order to do real tshuva for some indiscretion, it has to be a similar situation. You know, for someone who committed adultery at 25 and then at 75 to realize that was wrong, I'm not going to do it again, you know, it's a little late for that kind of tshuva. You know, you probably wouldn't be in your ability to do tshuva anyway, even if it was presented to you. So that's what we're talking about here in the framework of doing tshuva. But so we have to draw a fine line between when the Torah is telling us, and you're going to be responsible if you don't take benefit from that which you should have. And then another Gemara that says, make yourself holy by denying yourself that which is yours. So clearly, look, there's overindulgence. There's a price to pay for everything. I don't know if they knew about calories and carbohydrates back then, but they could see a cause and effect between overindulgence and that type of behavior and bad health, to say the least, but the bad things happening. So when we think we've gone For instance, during Aseret Yemei Tshuva, you ever notice that the Shulchan Aruch says, deny yourself certain pleasures during the 10 days of Tshuva? If you normally eat this, don't eat this, and don't, you know, refrain from that. If it's good to refrain from that for Aseret Yemei Tshuva, why not behave that way all year? And if I can eat it all year, why am I supposed to refrain from it during Aseret Yemei Tshuva? So the answer fits in with Richard's comment, is that if you, and the discussion of the gender, is that we want to be somewhere in a temperate zone. We don't want to go to extremes on anything. But if I want to be at a 5 on a scale of 1 to 10, in that temperate zone right there in the middle, and I realize that for some time I went down to be a 3, right? So for this week, let me go up and be a 7 or an 8. And then when the week is over, this after Yom Kippur, I'll settle down. I'll settle back into my comfort zone. Right? So that's what these mamarim are talking about. Now Shlomo here is really going, seems to be going to an extreme. At some point that he's violating Los Asuru. But at least we will find out at the end that he's doing it L'Shem Shammai, for our sake. Right? As I've sort of quipped before. As we'll find from many stories in this book, it is the thought entertained, the experimentation is not the issue, it's the conclusion. This is a book of empirical descriptions of what is the good life to lead. If he makes some mistakes along the way, that's okay. Again, he's doing it for us. Right?
So the question we had earlier, why wouldn't one want to repeat it to confirm this experiment?
That's your test of the experiment.
Well, since no one can confirm it to the point that he did, so you know, with the right. Now this is a little disingenuous coming from a man who overdid it. Remember the Tzvartara gave in the sukkah for why we invite Yosef in the sukkah but not Shlomo. Remember, usually when we have talk about seven Jews, we talk about Mishaber Chosin, we talk about Yaakov, Moshe, Aaron, David, Shlomo. Usually David and Shlomo are there, not Yosef. So Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Moshe, Aharon, David, and Shlomo. So what are you kicking out Shlomo and putting in Yosef? So it would seem that Shlomo really does not belong in the sukkah. The whole point of the sukkah is to, at the point of the year when we are cashing in our chips and becoming our wealthiest, sukkah's time, right? At the time of Chag Zman Simchoseinu, right? We don't want to have someone... Right, we don't want to have someone in the sukkah with us who let his pursuit of pleasure get the best of him. Not to mention with the fame he wanted for being the most powerful horse driver. He had 40,000 stables of horses, for goodness sakes. And he wanted to be the son-in-law of every king in the world and all these pleasures that got to him. So the sukkah is not a place for Shlomo. Yosef, he was a ruler who did not let all of that wealth get to him. Maintained Yosef Chayov in the time. Stayed Yosef. He maintained his moral compass and passed that on. So that's the reason why we want Yosef. And that's why we meet Koelis on Sukkot Stavka. At this Man Simchoseinu. It's a sober idea. Stanley, would you take us to
yes.
It is a familiar type of pasuk in this book. Let me explain, by the way, what I just said about the seven people I just mentioned. Every night of Sukkot, we invite another biblical character to the Sukkot with us. Yosef is one of those characters. Shlomo is not. That's what I meant by it. Okay. So I turned, Fonisi Adi, what is Fonisi? Means I looked it all over. Ponem means to look this way, to look that way. Yifen, Kovacho, Vayaki, and Yish. I looked at all those things together. I looked at the totality of what I did. Right? And, you know, you've ever heard of the Ramban's novel, Birshus HaTorah? Have you ever heard of him? Right? In Parshas Kedoshim, Ramban refers to a person who keeps every mitzvah in the Torah scrupulously, but is an absolute rogue. And he doesn't even mean in terms of nidos. He could be a kind person. But the bottom line is, how many hours did you work today? on the job.
Seven, eight.
Yeah, that's not so much for a Jew, by the way. Mm-hmm. Jews more than that. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Probably maybe 9 hours, 10 hours, 11 hours sometimes, right? So if you had just won the $100 million paintball, Powerball, whatever it's called, and you didn't have to work those 9, 10, 11 hours, would you have trouble filling in those 9, 10, 11 hours with meaningful things?
Probably at the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, you would think, you know, I'll stay on the job a little bit, I'll be good to my, you know, coworkers, I'll buy them all a car, maybe. And you find out they pay after taxes, you have no money. I think there's a honeymoon or something like that. Anyways, so if you have the independent wealth that Shlomo had, right? So you know you sit around all day, and what do? You know, you have this, you have that, you have this, women, you have this. It could be he's keeping all of these stops. Oh, it's fine. I'm Shabbos, okay. Okay, fine. I'm gonna stop Shabbos now. And then after another 4 hours of doing the same whatever, he got done enough mincha. You learn a little bit. Yeah. So let's call the novel Birshus HaTorah. So. You know, he seems to be behaving this way, right? He looks at all that he's doing and all these elements, right? And he says, you know what? This has done me nothing. I am no happier today when I started this experiment. Now, is that it? Is that all he's looking for? Happiness? Yeah. I don't know. He's looking for meaning. Happiness in the meaning of life. So sit down, look over the day and say, wow, I made a difference. Okay, you'll forgive me, but at some point, all of us, it should be 150 years from now, because they say the first person who's going to live 150 was already born. Because everyone's drinking this pomegranate juice. It's unbelievable. Every Monday, I get 2 weeks younger. But every one of us is going to be calling over someone and saying, okay, you know, what made the life worthwhile? That the person who you're going to talk to at the end is going to be wanting to live the kind of life you live because of what you did. That could be one person. It could be 500 people. That one person could influence 500 people. Right? Like I said, you know, I think I said this maybe a few weeks ago. Someone, someday, is going to review our entire life of 150 years in a half hour. Give them something good to say. And if it's Rosh Chodesh, it'll be 5 minutes. Never mind, I'm doing a funeral tomorrow, and the wife said, my husband gave me written instructions, no eulogy. I said, what am I supposed to say tomorrow? So I said, no eulogy. I said, let's talk about his life. I won't give a eulogy. I'll just tell about where he was born, how he was raised, some stories. There's a question in halacha whether if a parent tells you that, whether you have to listen or not, whether can you disobey the parent because you want to honor them, you want to give them a send away. The answer is yes, you can if it's you know, something that's real covered. If they were unequivocal in saying I absolutely restrict you and forbid you, and it was well known that, or not. There's a famous story of, I think it was Bnei Yehoshua, who commanded no eulogies, and they didn't listen. Kids got a psak, he's public property, you have to have a eulogy for the Bnei Yehoshua. And they made one. Anyway, I don't want to get to stuff on the eulogies, forgive me, but here it is. And then after that, 6 months later, they're gonna encapsulate your whole life with three lines on a stone. Yeah. If you're lucky, maybe five. If you have a long name, maybe they'll make a poem.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for making light of this, but the point is that what give them something good to write. That's the thing, because we're all how long are we here? We're here for a speck in eternity. Give it something that someone is doing something because you thought it was worthwhile. And the Shama, for goodness sake, the Shama is moving on, it's living on. Gizeh kol ha'adam. All right, you'll see this theme coming over and over again in this book, because while in the beginning of this book, we just read the whole thing, right, on Sukkos, in the beginning of this book, he has so many doubts about the inconsistencies of life. But as the book moves on, you see a man in this book who has great faith in things evening out at the end. Mm-hmm. It's just like Tehillim. Only Tehillim is different than Kohelet. Tehillim starts off with the faith. Chapter 1 has great faith. Ashrei Hagiyushashalot. First word has to be Ashrei in a book like that. But in the, then you move right into chapter 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Tremendous lack of faith in Salem. But at least it starts off with faith. Kohelet is the opposite. It starts off with the doubt and it moves towards faith. Tehillim just goes back and forth. Six, he's all over the place. Okay. I want to get you. Okay, so if I need to rose chokma be holelos, plus a few days. No, this is a strange passage. Right. What is man? Kimel Adam. What a piece of work. Right? So we're trying to shed light on this human condition after all my chakiros, right? I've tried all these holelos, I've tried all these tichlos, right? What can a man do after a king did all these things? Come on. Can any human being, a regular person, even think to try these things more than a king could? Right? And if a king didn't find any pleasure with this, so what are you going to do? You're going to make more toys? Make more stuff? Make a battery-operated turtleneck sweater? And a fur-lined sink? What are you going to have? I mean, what are you going to have? I don't know. So heated socks. You can have just all the toys in the world. Some people like to just have more toys. I saw a bumper sticker recently. The one with the most toys at the end wins. Not. Okay, so that's what he's saying about good days. How about if we I can't see this guy in the corner. I'm sorry. Gina, you there? Is that him? Oh, Julie, I'm sorry. Oh, finally, okay. So he has some sense that there is some chachma, something to chachma over foolishness. Okay, what's that? Ki yitron ha'or min ha'choshech.
Better
in the darkness all the time. Mm-hmm. Why?
You want to rob a bank.
No,
a lot of things look better in darkness. Like, a lot of times the light's too bright in your eyes.
Is he really talking about light and darkness and you know, there's a pasuk in Tehillim that says, Yomam HaShemesh Lo Yakeka V'Yoreach Baloyla. That the sun shall not smite you by day nor the moon by night. So Ibn Ezra writes in his commentary, and understand the sun not smiting you, the sunstroke, you can really get harmed by a dazzling sun. But how does the moon smite you at night? Mm-hmm. So Ibn Ezra writes, everybody knows, mamash like as if though it's Dabar Yadua L'chol, that the moon brings about lunacy, especially when it's full.
Lunacy.
I don't know if you had any lunacy. 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 So that's why some Rishonim refer to Rashi as Rishonim Yarchi because they thought he came from Lunu Nil, which he did not. But it's a mistake with someone else. But Lamaisa, the night is a time of where it also might have some smiting effect. My father, when he was running with fighting the partisans in the forest, and running in the night was the only time that he had any protection to his forage for food. But if it was a full moon outside, the moon could smite you. So they always gave that shot in the forests. Don't go out when the moon is full because they can see you from far. Go out in the new moon. That's where you go to put aside food. So what does he say? Ki yisron ha'or min ha'choshech. I'm not sure. I mean, yeah, day is a much better time than night. You don't need candles by day, baseball during the day. You know, you can do all kinds of things in day that you can't do at night. No question about it. Rashi, in his Perusha HaTorah, in his Parsha, actually has a different kind of parish to this that's very interesting. I'll share it with you. I don't know to what extent it's even shot of the Pasuk in Bereshit. Listen to the Pasuk. It says, Vayikra Elokim La'or Yom V'Lachoshech Kara Laila. And if you recall back on this Pasuk, Rashi is commenting on why Hashem puts his name next to Or, but he doesn't put his name next to Choshech. Vayikra Elokim La'or Yom V'Lachoshech Kara Laila. So Rashi says on the pasuk, "Ki yesh yitron la'or min ha-choshech." God does not put his name next to choshech; he puts his name next to or. Another point. I'm just trying to give the deeper meaning of these things. It says, "Vayi erev, vayi boker yom echad." It was night, it was day, day one. And there, you know, Rashi asks why it says day one and not the first day. So it's the first of the day of the one God. But the Kliyakar understands Rashi in a much deeper way. He says that there are many ancient civilizations that believed that there was a multiplicity of gods involved in the creation of the universe. Not least it was Christianity. Zoroastrianism and other religions believed that there was a good god, a bad god, a good force, a bad force. They're primal forces that bounced off of each other and created the universe. But we believe that Yever Boker Yom Echad, it's all one source. That source wants to associate with Or, not with Choshech. However, both sources emanate from the same god. But God prefers to associate himself with Or. As it says, V'yikra Elokim La'or Yom, V'lachoshech Kara Laila. So the obvious question is, come on, if you know Biblical Hebrew, the Bible is not about to say something like V'yikra Elokim La'or Yom, V'lachoshech Kara Elokim Laila. That's not Biblical parallelism, it's not Biblical stylistics. The style of the Bible is to write V'yikra Elokim La'or Yom, V'lachoshech Kara, without repeating the subject, Kara Laila. This is the question. If you said Vayi Erev, Vayi Boker, Yom Echad, you should have said Vayikra Elokim Lachoshech Laila V'Laor Karayom. Right? If you started off with night, the Pasuk should have said Vayikra Elokim Lachoshech Laila. Start off with Choshech like you started off with Laila. Why did it start Vayikra Elokim La'or Yom Lachoshech Kara Laila? Because godliness associates with light more than darkness. Now, look, this is obvious. It's not obvious that whatever forces represent night is God wants to associate with. Yisron ha'or min ha'choshech. This is all I believe Kohelet is trying to say is that various pursuits of human happiness will bring you light and some will bring you darkness. You may think as you are pursuing it that this is a good pursuit. Look, America had a whole 60s where it was attempting to find some kind of meaning and some kind of happiness, and all those guys are now running this country, I think. Well, they're all doing something. They're running colleges, I think, right? But there was an attempt to find something. So they'll argue, see, we're okay. We're not okay. All right, fair enough. Many didn't, also did not. Right? In other words, he's trying to tell you that pursuits of happiness that stems from chokhmah, the chokhmah amdoli, will give you light. Pursuits of happiness that are not tempered with chokhmah, but tempered with sichus and foolishness, and without being in charge with the mind, is going to be ruinous like darkness. And that is his final muster on that. Okay, I want to take questions now because next week is almost a new topic. Still on the topic of Chochmah, but it's really, we've turned the corner and he's going to discuss some of the disappointments that can come in Chochmah too. Right? Because Shlomo knows that children will move away the mother bird and listen to their parents and get killed on the way down. And Chas V'Shalom, I don't want to put Chas V'Shalom in Ayin Hara. There are people who are on their way home from a mitzvah, on their way to a mitzvah, something terrible happens. Those things are not going to stop happening because we don't like it. They're happening because there are all these inconsistencies in the world, and who's going to say why they have to happen? I don't see the big picture. Sof davar kol nishma. I don't see God's face. I don't even see God's back, for goodness sakes. But Moshe did, and I'll trust him that there is a cheshbon. But next week we're going to talk about all the follies of Chochmah. It's Chochmah also. I try to temper everything with my desires. And what happens? I get hit by a safe on my way out. Okay. camera pulls out the window as they're lowering it, and it falls on my head. Here's Moshe.
It seems that he sort of particularly, at least from the passage that I was reading, and essentially it was his wisdom that he was blessed in the first place, as you prefer, that prevented him from enjoying.
Well, letting this enjoyment come to ruination.
No, well, I think it's the other way around. It prevented him from enjoying everything that he'd been doing. Listen, most people with a tad less wisdom might have been happy to the day they died. It was only because he was like at a level of analyzing and self-analyzing that he sort of came to a point where he could not handle the pursuit of happiness. And I thought he was just the last pasuk that we covered that he sort of just has to justify himself with the light is better than the darkness. He doesn't prove the light is better than the darkness. He just says, well, it's like somehow I am smart, so being smart must be better than not.
Well, it is sort of like something Socrates said after him, is that the life has to be analyzed. You can just sit back and be very happy and just, you know, and have a simple mind and just say, this gives me pleasure, I look forward to doing it again for the next time. I'll work for 6 months, so I can go on vacation for 2 weeks, and I'll work another 6 months, so I can go on vacation for 2 weeks, and I'll keep on the cycle of life like that. And Shlomo was just saying if because I'm so smart, I was not able to really take the proper enjoyment out of this, so be it. But that's better than the alternative for me, as Socrates makes very clear, that whether the word is virtue or all that is good, or however you want to translate what he's looking for, he says that it has to be through analysis of your life. And if that analysis leads to more pain, it's better than not having the analysis. Right. Even if that examination may cause machov is the word here in this chapter he's going to use later, that all this chachma brings me. Cave. Okay, look, we're not solving less problems yet, but we're getting closer.
Maybe next week. It's
going to take a few weeks. So come tune in to next week. We're going to continue with a new topic almost, plus the $1. Oh, I didn't say it. Sorry.